Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Miami Heat win their 8th straight game, beating the Brooklyn Nets yet again. This one a little less dramatic than the last one. This time winning 104-96, and quite frankly, it wasn't really that close towards the end. Another win, David. 8 straight. I mean, what do we stop? Are we at the point where we stop acting surprised?
No. I don't think we're ever going to get to that point. I mean, even if they win 20 in a row, which, again, that would be very, very surprising. But even if they continue to win throughout the rest of the season, it would still be surprising given how badly they started off the season. So, look, at this point, every win is an exciting one, even one against a bad team like Brooklyn. Look, Brooklyn has the worst record in the league. They haven't won in the new year, I think. You know, they've really struggled. They've just won one game in their last 10, so it's not like you're beating a world championship team like the Golden State Warriors, but Miami was able to beat them a few weeks ago. So there's just a lot of positives here. I think you just have to focus on those. I mean, embrace the success, even if it might cost them a higher seed in the draft or something like that. But at this point, I think it's just appreciate the wins while we have them.
So no Dion Waiters game-winning straightaway three in this game, right?
Not necessary.
It wasn't even necessary, right? After the Heat got off to a slow start in the first quarter, but won every quarter after that, mainly thanks to a 17-0 run to wrap up the second quarter, which was their longest scoring streak of the season.
Yeah.
And then a 9-0 run in the middle of the third quarter. So between those two runs, Miami was able to put this game away, essentially. The interesting part about this game, and kind of a trend that's been happening in this streak, the Heat didn't dominate the paint. In this game, they got... throughout the streak. In this game, they got killed in the paint. They were outscored by 18 points, 58-40 by the Brooklyn Nets. However, right, they won on the perimeter. They made 11 of their 26 three-pointers compared to Brooklyn's 4 of 26. So the backcourt continues to dominate during this streak. And Whiteside is becoming less... they're not relying on him as much to score as a number one scoring option. We even saw a quote by James Johnson talking about Whiteside, talking about how, you know, his teammates are trying to get him to understand how dominant he can be. And I wonder if that's a little bit about, look, you don't have to touch the ball. You don't have to get X amount of hook shots per game to dominate a game. You could dominate it without touching the ball, because now we have Waiters and Dragic, who are both playing maybe the best basketball of their careers at this point. Like,
right,
they're playing, like, we don't, so we got to get the ball in their hands, and you need to dominate in other areas. And I think that's kind of the formula that's happening.
Yeah, actually, it reminds me a lot about how his style of play was when he first started breaking out. He was still capable of having those huge games, but he was just trying to find his footing amongst, you know, superstar veterans like Dwayne Wade or Chris Bosh or even Goran Dragic post the trade a couple of seasons ago. So he was just a complimentary role player there, but it seemed far more efficient than the kind of performances that he displayed at the start of this season, where he was trying to do too much. He would force a lot of shots. He would get into double teams or triple teams and hoist up a bad shot. This is a much more effective version of him. He got into foul trouble. He fouled out, actually, only finished with 12 points, but it seemed like a really tight, efficient version of the player that we've come to expect. So he's 6 of 10 shooting, not bad, 9 rebounds, 3 blocks of steal. He just seems much more in control. There was even one play there where he was double teamed under the hoop, and he just waited patiently and then was able to kick it out to an open shooter and they knocked down to 3. It was a really nice setup for him, although he's not credited with an assist.
He set really good screens.
He did.
There was a few where he made really great contact with the defender, and Waiters and Dragic are finding him more on the roll, and it was something you and I had talked about for a while this season, was how the Heat just seemed to be taking the easy way out and just kind of throwing him the ball in the post and just letting him right. do his quote-unquote post moves. Which were usually just kind of spinning out of control and pushing the ball towards the hoop. But now it seems like they're finding him more on the roll. They're getting ahead of him and throwing it back or throwing up lobs to him on a side pick and roll and stuff like that. Like, there seems to be a rededication to finding Whiteside on the move again, which was what he was so good at in the first place. Right. And I guess, you know, when Wade was here, because he's so dominant and has the gravitas to bring a second defender out and then get the lob up to Whiteside, that's why he had such a good chemistry with Hassan Whiteside and why he was able to unlock a lot of what Whiteside was able to do offensively. Wade leaves, Dragic doesn't have that same chemistry, doesn't have really the same reputation around the league or gravitas that Wade does, so he doesn't command the same sort of double teams. Mm. But I think with his increased play and his maybe finally finding some chemistry with Whiteside as regards to like how he wants to set up screens, what direction he wants to go in, etc., with that, plus Deion Waiters' just raw ability to get to the second level of the defense, mm-hmm. those things combined are forcing opponents to focus more on Miami's backcourt, and as such, those guys are able to get Whiteside more involved in more efficient ways.
Yeah, it's funny you brought that up about Deion being able to get into the second level of the defense there, and it's something that you and I had talked about as far as how effective Goran Dragic is at getting to the hoop, how he creates space by forcing contact. And it was a really good piece by a friend of the program, Anthony Chang of the Palm Beach Post, where he describes the burgeoning relationship between Waiters and Dragic, how they're very close both off the court and on the court, how they have very similar styles of play. Goran even goes as far as to say that Deion is a much better fit for his style, and he appreciates playing alongside him more than he did against Wade or with Wade. So that was a pretty interesting comment there. But, you know, Waiters did talk to Chang about, you know, how he creates space at the hoop. He calls it the cold shoulder, the way Goran kind of leans his shoulder into a big man as he gets to the rim and forces that contact and either creates the space or draws a foul. And it's something you and I had talked about, how effective it is and why he manages to finish at the rim so efficiently. And it looks like that's helping. You know, not just Waiters, it's helping Whiteside, as you pointed out, too, in that he creates that space. And all of a sudden, the big man gets pulled off. If there's a double team there, all of a sudden, he can kick the lob over to Whiteside or Willie Reed or even James Johnson, who's able to finish at the rim pretty efficiently as well. So it just benefits all around.
Yeah, and it helps the three-point shooting, right? As
Absolutely.
We mentioned, the three-point shooting has been so much better recently. And when you're able
42.3% tonight, yeah, that's 42%, pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, when you're able to establish that in the paint, you know, and then after that you're able to spray out to the corners and do these things. I mean, before it was really just Dragic doing all these things. And maybe he just had too much of the load on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And having Waiters now to do that, I mean, I love this tag team. I mean, they want to be called 7-Eleven now, but that's not going to happen. But it's...
Make it happen. They're always
open. Let's just we'll run with it for this podcast, and we'll see what happens. So 7-Eleven, I love these stat lines now, right? It's just like the stat lines tonight were not identical, but they're both racking up assists. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, Dragic had 8 assists. Waiters had 9 assists. I mean...
Impressive.
It's... They're able to do this on a game-to-game basis where they're able to shoulder the facilitating and the scoring load a lot. And they're. I was thinking about this during the Nets game tonight. They look to have a better chemistry than Dragic and Wade ever did.
Yeah, absolutely.
There seems to be a little bit more, less ego involved. There seems to be less ego, less like, okay, I know you have to take the turn now, Wade. And neither of them slow the game down the way Dwayne Wade did. You know, I mean, Dwayne Wade, one of the greatest post-up guards of all time, likes to do that and slows the game down. Waiters and Dragic, they like to just get to the rim and make a decision. And that's their game. And I think both of them together is working really well, not unlike what Dragic and Eric Bledsoe had in Phoenix when Dragic had his all-NBA year, right?
Yeah.
It's similar to that. And it's a really nice chemistry that they got going. And with all of that involved, Miami's, you know, Whiteside's become more efficient. They're able to get more open looks from three-point range. I mean, it's really like when we dig down to what's causing this 8-game win streak, that is a really big part of it. It's a lot of, you know, we hype up Waiters and everything, but it's that combination of Waiters and Dragic, that backcourt, they figured out how to make this roster tick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. They're the fuel that drives the engine right now, but they're getting such great contributions from everybody else. I mean, Rodney Magruder in particular is looking better and better with each performance. His defense today, his versatility defensively is so understated. I mean, his ability to match up with smaller guards, and he's not particularly big at 6'4", but he's able to handle smaller, quicker guards. He can handle big men sparingly. He had a really nice...
Yeah, go ahead. You're gonna
no, he had a really nice block on Bogdanovich at one point there where they called a foul, and then replays clearly showed that he was blocking it. He was able to hang in the air, keep his arm extended, and just had the right amount of length and timing to swat the shot, and it just looked like he had drawn contact, and that's why they called a foul, but it was just so effective.
It was a garbage foul. There was no business like
absolutely
that would be called. And he had another play against Brook Lopez where he stole the ball from him, and he lost the ball out of bounds, but he defended Brook Lopez in the post and prevented Brook Lopez from dunking on him or scoring in general. He was able to steal the ball and it goes out of bounds, but the play resets and without the ball in Brook Lopez's hands right under the rim. So that's a really good defensive play.
Do you think Lopez's strength is questionable? Because I saw James Johnson, who's clearly a pretty sturdy player, he just ripped the ball right out of Lopez at one point.
Yeah, but Brook Lopez got 150 pounds on Rodney Magruder? Like,
yeah, I guess so.
Maybe not that much. I'm exaggerating, but still.
Maybe not.
Magruder,
he's
six,
huge.
Yeah, he is, I guess. So 6'4", 180 pounds maybe, Magruder?
He's pretty stocky. I'd say he's probably closer to
200 maybe? Yeah, okay. So 200 probably sounds right. And Lopez is at least 260, much bigger. Anyway.
It lists him at 6'4", 205 on ESPN, so.
There you go.
That's Magruder.
So, I mean, like everybody, like Magruder is able to play better. Wayne Ellington, who we've talked about, is finally hitting his shots, and they're running plays for him. They're setting him up off pin down screens, and it works. And they're able to do that, and they're able to find him in the corner. And James Johnson is hitting threes. O'Carroll White is hitting three pointers. I mean, look, this isn't a title winning team, but this is finally a team that looks like they've put it together. They figured out stuff that works for them, right? Like, as big as of a win that Warriors game was, they probably lose that game 9 out of 10 times. You know what I mean? And
sure.
So, but these other wins, like the Warriors game notwithstanding, these other wins, they figured out a way to make this team work. You know, even Luke Babbitt sitting in the corner, didn't he just, had 11 points against Golden State, and what did he do tonight? I don't even know.
3 points, 1 of 2 shooting, 1 of 3, 1 of 2 from 3
points. Dangerously close to a Babbitt, but.
he had 2 rebounds, though.
Yeah, I mean.
2 rebounds.
Little quick aside, I'm not sure Babbitt knows how to play basketball, just to be honest. Like, every time he has the ball in his hands and he starts dribbling, I'm like, have you done this before?
Come on, we talked about this already. He's a very good, he's a great player.
Okay.
Relatively
speaking.
I know
I pick on him. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so, okay. All right, we talked about the backcourt. Dragic and Waiters, 39 combined points and 17 assists. Waiters, 19 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds. Dragic, 20 points, 8 assists, 3 rebounds. I mean, they dominated the game from start to finish. Dragic got into a little bit of foul trouble there at the end, but Waiters was able to stay in. And James Johnson played a big part of Miami maintaining their lead when Dragic went out. I thought that was a turning point in the game. When Dragic caught that last foul, his fourth foul, I believe, and he went to the bench with, I think, 9 minutes left. And at that point, James Johnson came in and played a little bit of point forward. And that was with 9 minutes to go, and the Heat maintained the 6-point lead while James Johnson was in playing point forward.
Yeah.
For about 3 or 4 minutes. And that was considering how Dragic was the high scorer for the Heat in that game, that could have been an opportunity for the Nets to come back and tie the game or get it closer. But no, the Heat were able to maintain that lead. And when Dragic came back, they just were able to bust it open even more. And I thought that was a big part of the game.
I agree 100%. And you know, to your point earlier, it looks like things are finally starting to come together. I think people have understood their roles. As the seasons have evolved, guys like Whiteside, who had a much larger role at the start, kind of figured out how to be more complimentary. The loss of Justice Winslow, while on paper it seems like a devastating one, he was trying to do too much, and it's probably best for him to assimilate back into a more comfortable complementary role once he's healthy next season. But for now, this is an exciting team. It's one that's looking to continue winning. They've got some easy games upcoming, coming up in the rest of their schedule. So this is the perfect opportunity to listen to the Locked On Heat podcast.
Absolutely. I mean, with Miami winning 8 games and who knows how many more, maybe a finals run coming up, I don't know. I mean, with them rolling like this, you shouldn't forget to subscribe to Locked On Heat. That way you get post-game analysis like this, instant reactions to every game, plus our can't-miss mailbags. Go to iTunes, subscribe if you aren't already. Good point, David. James Johnson, 17 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, 3 blocks, 2 steals.
Hell of a dunk on a missed shot there where he followed up, yes. Right, with the left hand. Yeah, that was amazing.
That was a great dunk. I didn't even see that one coming. He came in from like a weird angle. It was fantastic.
Ran right along the left baseline, right baseline rather, and he just finished it with his left hand under the hoop. He had to actually duck his head because he was so high up off the ground, almost at the rim. That was really good. He eventually, if you watch the game, he did seem to wrench his shoulder on the last play of the game right as time expired. But following that, if you haven't seen the game, just know that James Johnson is fine, just a bit of a stinger, and it looks like he'll be back for Wednesday's game against the Atlanta Hawks.
Good point, yeah. That put back with 56 seconds, that basically sealed the game. He had that block on the last play of the game. I mean, he was all over the place in that fourth quarter. Between James Johnson, Deion Waiters, and Goran Dragic, actually, those three assisted or scored on 17 of Miami's 20 points in the fourth quarter. That trio really did the work in that final period. And those are the veteran guys, right? Like, those are the guys that you want to step up. And you know, I mentioned James Johnson stepping in and you know, having to come in when he wasn't supposed to. He wasn't supposed to be in there at 9 minutes. He was supposed to be in there later if Spoelstra could have stuck to the rotations he wanted to. But with Dragic picking up that foul, he had to go to James Johnson. James Johnson didn't just get to come in and play power forward like he's been doing. Right. It's like, I need you to come in and play point guard for us because Dragic is out and we can't afford to lose him in the final seconds or the final minutes of this game. And he went in and he performed. I mean, he went in, he immediately brought the ball up, he immediately started trying to find guys and facilitate. Then Waiters eventually came back in after he got his scheduled rest and kind of took over. But just those minutes and that versatility that James Johnson continues to show. I mean, I read the stat line. I mean, it's flooded. You know what I mean? Like, this guy just affects the game in so many different ways.
Go ahead.
He's making a case to re-sign this guy. Like, this is a guy that I watch games like this and just his utility, like, he's just so able to fill in so many different spots that, right. You know, he's not necessarily outstanding in any one way. Like, he didn't score all 17 of those points from the three-point line or getting dunks. He scored them on, like, little putbacks, that dunk that you mentioned. He hit a couple threes, like... These are just, like, he's able to score 17 points, but, like, all the points are, like, you know, from different places. You know what I mean? He doesn't just do it in one way.
Sure. No, yeah. He's either running the fast break, looking to create for other players, or if he takes it himself, he's got a really nice spin move. His girth and strength notwithstanding, he's much quicker and a much better ball handler. He's able to get past smaller defenders or bigger ones because, you know, he can use his quickness to get past them. And it's just that versatility. Again, we've mentioned it before, but it bears repeating. No one expected this. And I watch these games with James Johnson, particularly a night like tonight when he's so dominant, versatile, and excellent, just fun to watch. And you go, damn it, I hope this isn't just contract year James Johnson lighting things up and getting cocky and doing all these things. But he was in a contract year last year with Toronto, and he didn't do half of as much. That's true. They loved him in Toronto because of his personality, because of flashes like this. But these flashes became less and less frequent during his tenure there, and he wound up becoming, you know, replaced in the lineup in the rotation by Patrick Patterson, a guy who does very similar things. Although I don't think he's nearly the same kind of ball handler Johnson is. And so
Oh my gosh, Toronto is wishing they had this James Johnson right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you look at the Raptors and their title chances and they're like, wow, if we could only get a power forward who could defend and create shots and knock down the – oh, wait, James Johnson, he's in Miami right now. So, you know, I'm tempered by that realization, but at the same time, I think he's just gone to a much better place here. Look, and you have to, you know, now that we're kind of in a positive spin in the season, and you know they've won 7-8 games in a row now, you have to look at what they're doing well. We've talked about Spoelstra's impact, but you can even go back a little bit. That's a micro view. A macro view of how effective everything's been going is the fact that Miami has historically always gotten players on reclamation-type projects and gotten them into the best shape of their careers, got them to turn in a quality season here. And whether or not they remain with the Heat or not or are able to cash in elsewhere, that's still an MO for this team. They've done this throughout the franchise's history. You go back decades, and for a good long string there, they were taking in point guards that nobody else wanted. Mm-hmm. They would bring them in here for 1 year, and all of a sudden they would get a huge deal elsewhere. And that was just from Isaac Austin, you know, a guy who filled in for Alonzo Mourning at one point in the mid 90s when he was lost to injury. You know, he was a guy who was fat. He lost a lot of weight here in camp. Nobody had much respect for his game, and he was able to make that and turn into a huge contract with the Clippers. That's why we traded him there for Brent Barry during that one half season when he was here in Miami. That was a long time ago, but still. Yeah. That's just the Birdman. Look at Birdman. Look how effective exactly. He was. It's the guy who had been out of the league for 2 years. Even Hassan Whiteside to a lesser extent. Maybe he was still in pretty good shape and he always had that physical ability, but you know, nobody could harness it as well as Miami does, and that's just something they've done throughout their history.
Absolutely. And thinking about guys like Tyler Johnson, Roddy McGruder, Whiteside, like you mentioned, all James Johnson, Deion Waiters, all these guys are playing such big roles for this team that is rolling right now. Final notes for this game. Tyler Johnson, it was his first game back since January 19th. He had just 3 points, but it was good to see him back on the floor. McGruder, really we mentioned, 13 points on 3 of 6 three-point shooting. And Hassan Whiteside. I want to talk about him briefly and his defense against Brook Lopez, because in that first matchup, yes, he was dominated by Brook Lopez. Lopez hit, didn't he take like 13 or 14 threes in that game? He made like half.
He hit his first seven?
Yeah.
He hit his first seven three point
match. Tonight, 0 of 6. So,
three point match, yeah.
For Brooklyn, the strategy was still there, right? Let's take Whiteside out of the paint by having Brook shoot even more threes than he usually does, which is something he's done this year. And they tried to do it. I thought his shot wasn't falling like it was. I mean, go figure. He's a center.
He missed it. He missed wide right for a huge air ball in the fourth quarter that the Heat fans wrote him about.
So that helped Whiteside, but I did think Whiteside did a better job switching on to him, trying to stay with him out there on the perimeter. Wasn't as antsy, I thought. Like, he was kind of settled in. He's like, okay, I'm gonna have to defend you out here. Like, and it didn't seem like he was as nervous about it, and that was a good improvement to see. That's exactly the sort of thing you want to see from a young team. He wasn't good at it in the first matchup, and he improved pretty markedly in this matchup.
I mean, look, it still got him into foul trouble, and you'd expect that of a guy who's as versatile offensively as Lopez is, a guy who can shoot to mid-range, who has a pretty good hook shot from distance, who can hit from three-point range. You know, he's a very, very good scorer, and so he did get his sign into some, you know, perhaps questionable foul call there, but he did foul out eventually.
And you're asking Whiteside to move around a lot. That's going to, you know, when he's got to come out all the way to the perimeter, he's got to move around a lot. He's got to shuffle his feet more, and that leads to more fouls.
But something we didn't have at the start of the season either is a much better version of Willie Reed. And I know that I don't want to keep going on about it, but I think it's just, it's been such a huge difference. I mean, look, it's been a couple games now and he keeps doing it, but that spin move is downright deadly.
Yeah. I mean, Reed, we've talked about his ability to play in space. He just seems more comfortable at it than Whiteside. Whiteside seems to just kind of lumber his way towards the rim sometimes. Reed seems just more comfortable getting the ball near the foul line and making a move with it. Well, I think Whiteside isn't really sure what he wants to do, even when he's doing it.
Right.
It seems like Reed has, like, okay, I have my spin move, and if I don't have to spin, I'm just going to go straight towards the rim. These are my two things that I do. And
six rebounds for him tonight. Yeah, 6 rebounds, 6 points, 3 of 3 shooting, just 17 minutes of play. Mm-hmm. But again, even if he's not coming in and playing huge minutes, he's providing a boost. It's not as significant a drop-off as the version of Whiteside that we saw in November and December, where he was taking 20-something shots and missing a lot and trying to do too much and holding the ball for too long. You know, Whiteside plays 30 minutes like he did tonight. Reed comes in and plays 17 minutes. It's a good counterbalance there. It's a really effective duo, I think. And it provides heat. I mean, it provides size, length, height. But at the same time, you know, you also have a great deal of athleticism. Like, you know, if the league is evolving to the point where you want to have that kind of versatility at all five positions, well, you don't necessarily have that offensively with these guys. They're not going to spot up from the three-point line, but they can do a lot. They can defend a number of different players. I think they're both, you know, move well laterally and have the kind of quickness where they can guard a number of players. So, and you know, their rim protection is a pretty big bonus as well.
It's a big part of what the Heat are doing. It's a big part of how they're winning games. And like I said, they figured out things that tick. I'm looking at the box score again. I mentioned how Dragic, Waiters, and James Johnson dominated that fourth quarter.
Yeah.
They were the only three players to register an assist in this game. Isn't that crazy?
Is it real?
Oh, Dragic, Waiters, and James Johnson, the only three players to register an assist.
That's
Dragic had 8, Waiters had 9, James Johnson had 5.
That's interesting.
Unless this is some sort of glitch on the ESPN box score.
No. I think you're right. I mean, like I said, I thought Whiteside had kicked it out at one point, but there might have been just a foul call or something like that. But
the ball movement was good. It's just crazy that those are the guys. Like, and that look, that's like an extreme version of an extremely distilled version of what's going on with the Heat right now. It's those three guys. Like Dragic and Waiters are leading that offensive unit, and James Johnson is a big part of why that second unit is thriving. And Tyler Johnson, you know, once he gets his legs back, he's going
to
be.
You imagine he'll be able to. Yeah, exactly.
He'll be part of that. So, all right.
Nobody else around this roster can really create shots other than those four. So that's okay.
Exactly. All right, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or by email, or you can send us mailbag questions. Are we going to have a surprise mailbag later this week? We might. Comments, sponsorship opportunities. You can send all of those things to lockedonheat@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe, like David told you earlier. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Hey, Wes again. Did you know that podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with a sponsor than listeners of any other medium? If your company is looking to reach a male audience between the ages of 18 and 44, you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Heat is listened to by 95% men, 74% of which are between the ages of 18 and 44. Plus, our rates are reasonable, or you can decide that for yourself. Email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com to find out more about sponsoring Locked On Heat and engaging the audience you want to reach.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.